Good afternoon. We'll get the meeting started here. It's 12:30, the Ag Policy Committee meeting, and the clerk will note the roll. We're not yet at a quorum, so we will not proceed with any votes at this point, but we will begin the presentation that we're going to have today, and we do have the overview of the Department of Agriculture, including the governor's policy initiatives. And we have a couple of people that we welcome to the table. And if you'll introduce yourselves, please, for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greta Gauthier, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Madam Chair, I'm Matt Wallman from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and Assistant Commissioner.
Very good. So you can go ahead with your testimony. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members, for giving me the opportunity to join you here today. I'm Matt Wallman. As I mentioned, I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I grew up on a family farm in southwestern Minnesota near Renville, and our farm was homesteaded by my great-great-grandparents back in 1868, and I'm proud to be the fifth generation to carry on that family tradition. Agriculture has always been an important part of our state's economic fabric. And today, Minnesota is the nation's fifth most productive agricultural state, with nearly 27 million acres devoted to agricultural production, $15 billion in annual sales, and 340,000 Minnesota jobs supported by nearly 80,000 Minnesota farms.
If you'll just, I apologize, Matt, I'm just going to interrupt just for a moment. We have a quorum, so I just wanted to identify that. So yep. Go ahead, Mr. Wallman.
Our lakes also, our lakes, rivers, and streams also feature prominently in our recreation and outdoor quality of life. The quality, quantity, and the beauty of these public waters is what makes Minnesota so special. But all too often, we in our public discourse are called upon to take one stand or the other, to take one side or the other, and we get pushed to make a false choice about how to deal with these issues. And so, Madam Chair, members, on the issue of water quality and agriculture, I would argue that we cannot afford to take a stand of either or. We need both, a sound agricultural economy as well as a strong water quality system here in the state. The good news is Minnesota has a history of producers who care deeply about our land and water resources. And we have a tradition and a value system here in Minnesota that understands and appreciates the importance of good soil and clean water. Because of that, Minnesota is the ideal location, I believe, to develop this new program called the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. And Madam Chair, I'm going to run through a series of slides here that gives you an update of where we're at with this program and what we're hoping to achieve with that. So the vision of the program is really to develop a voluntary program, and I repeat, a voluntary program to enhance water quality here in Minnesota. We want to make sure that we maintain farm profitability as well as enhance the water quality of our state's lakes, rivers, and streams. We want to recognize farmers who are doing a good job. We want to provide certainty and assurance to the public that we're enhancing water quality, and we also want to provide regulatory certainty to producers that attain and maintain the certification criteria, that the goalpost isn't going to move on them at some point in the future. Last January, Governor Dayton signed a memorandum of understanding along with U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson. And that memorandum of understanding basically affirmed the support of a voluntary program. They decided to work towards developing an advisory committee and to provide the recognition and certainty that the public and the producers are looking for, as well as to coordinate and prioritize funding for the program. So the timeline of the project since January, Commissioner Fredrickson put out a call for nominations to be on the advisory committee. There was a diverse group of members that was selected, 15 members representing agricultural interests as well as conservation, environmental interests, local governments, and so forth. Throughout the summer, the committee met, and we were hoping that they could provide us a collection of recommendations. And we were surprised when the group came back with a unanimous recommendation back to the commissioner. And so we, Commissioner Fredrickson, received those recommendations from our advisory committee in mid-November. And so we're in the process of reviewing those recommendations and have decided to go out and hold a number of listening sessions across Minnesota starting later this month. So the advisory committee, as I mentioned, included a group of members from agricultural, conservation, environmental, and local government interests, among others. The committee put together a series of recommendations presented in seven position papers that outlined pilot projects, how the program would operate, the specifications around a measurement tool, how we would handle and manage data, what we mean by certainty and incentives and promotion and so forth. So I'm going to go through a few of those areas today. The committee recommended that the commissioner consider having three pilot projects across Minnesota. And these pilot projects would seek, you know, the input from local areas to determine whether the right amount of synergies and partnerships taking place in those local areas to have a strong and successful pilot. So later this month, Commissioner Fredrickson will be putting out a request for recommendations from local area partners who are willing to consider having their pilot watershed, their watershed be considered as a pilot watershed for this program. Essentially, the program operations as a farmer would come into this program. They would do an initial self-assessment. The self-assessment would give them a sense of where they're at in terms of whether they would be eligible for certification right away or whether they would need some technical assistance to meet the certification criteria. Then they would move in either into the certification realm or they would take and get that additional technical assistance. Once they have made the necessary upgrades in terms of adoption of best management practices, they would be certified by a certifier who would be accredited by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Then following that, there would be a verification process where we would verify through the department that not only the certifier was doing their job, but also that the farmer is continuing to maintain those best management practices that they had committed to. So the measurement tool is really the critical piece of the puzzle. And we're in the process of developing that measurement tool right now. And essentially, it will provide an assessment of the farm's current practices. They will identify where improvements can be made. It will provide an index of water quality stewardship. And that index then could be used to determine whether or not the farm reaches the high or the level of needed to be achieved for certification. It will provide a farm site specific measure. So it is not we are not certifying the producer, we are certifying the parcel. I think that's a really important distinction to make. will provide flexibility for farmers to choose the kinds of best management practices that they would like to adopt on their particular farm. We're not in the business of telling people how to farm. We're in the business of providing them the options. And so this measurement tool would provide them the options in terms of best management practices that they could use to achieve certification. And it will account for differences in various different watersheds across the state. The Root River watershed is very different than the Sauk River watershed or up in the Red River Valley. And so we need to account for those different areas of resource concerns as well as different topography, farming types, and so forth. So what is certainty? Certainty is offered by the executive branch at this point. We are hoping to have some language for this committee to consider later this year. And so hopefully it would be offered also by the legislative branch of government. It is not an exemption of rules or regulation. It's relevant, as I mentioned before, to the land within a particular agricultural operation. And it applies to the management practices that could affect water quality. So we're focusing just on water quality, not all the other areas of a farm operation. And so it would be certainty is conditional upon attaining the certification criteria and then the maintenance of those practices. So for farmers, it really means that there would be no new state water quality regulations applied to certified farmers during that certification period. And the advisory committee recommended 10 years as that period of time. Certified farms would be considered to be meeting their contributions to targeted reductions for pollutants, and they would be recognized as responsible stewards of their land and for water quality. For the public, it is assurance that certified farms are doing their part to avoid water quality impacts, and assurance that they're taking action to protect and improve water quality, and that they're doing their part and will continue to do their part for the full period of certification. But I think most importantly is that it will set up a process to have measurable outcomes over time in terms of measuring water quality impacts. So the next steps are Commissioner Fredrickson is reviewing the advisory committee recommendations. We'll be hearing the discussion of the listening sessions that we're hosting across the state. And we will take any additional public input that is submitted to the agency. We are, in the next week or so, we'll be putting out a request for recommendations for the pilot area watersheds. And we're in the process of developing the measurement tool by which we will assess the farms. So with that, on the certification program, Madam Chair, that's all I have at this point. If you have any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Woolman, just a question on the certification process, or more specifically, those who do the certifying. It looks like they're going to be coming out to a farm, certifying it once, and then making recurring visits to verify practices. Will these be new people hired by the department, or how is that whole aspect going to be handled?
Mr. Woolman.
It would potentially, yes, and we're still working through all of those details. That area, I think with any good program, you need to make sure that what we say we're doing, we're doing. And so we're auditing and verifying that the criteria are met and that the certifier is doing his or her job, but also that the farmers are maintaining those practices. And so, yes, we would seek to have an additional person potentially to work on audits.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. So is there funding for this in the governor's budget?
Mr. Wollman.
Madam Chair, could Representative Anderson please repeat the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there funding for this program as a separate line item in the governor's budget?
Mr. Wollman.
Madam Chair, yes, there is. There's $3 million in Clean Water Legacy Funds that have been allocated towards this program.
All right. Any other Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, you talked about certainty to the producers that the goalpost isn't going to move on them in the future. And I see that it says certification will give farmers greater certainty and that they will not require additional water quality practices for a period under certification. So does that mean any new rules and regulations that the legislature passes will not apply to the people that enroll in this program?
Mr. Wollman.
Madam Chair, Representative, we cannot assume anything, you know, in terms of what the legislature will pass. And you know, if the legislature passes a law, we have to uphold the law. But in certain cases, the agency has the ability to write rules, and so any new additional rules or regulations that would be passed that would have the agency's ability to write those rules, in that case, there would be certainty. We will be also coming, as I mentioned before, with some legislative language that we hope that you would consider and potentially pass this legislative session.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So. You know, it's that I understand what you're saying. When we're talking about certainty, and if we're saying that the goalposts then will not move, really, it's at the mercy of the legislators. And I hope everybody realizes that as well. We can say we want to give them certainty and everything else, but if we pass legislation here, it could affect them in essence. Like you said, you have to enforce the law, correct?
Mr. Wollman.
Madam Chair, you know, the agencies have statutory authorization to write rules in certain cases, and those rules can impact producers. Now, having mentioned before that, you know, the legislature can pass laws, and the agency is obligated to uphold those laws. So, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think to this discussion we're having here, I think it's context is important to remember we have three co-equal branches of government, and the executive branch can only really be responsible for self-directed things of the rulemaking process. And so with this, I think what they're trying to say is with certainty, they're doing it within their power. They do not control the legislative branch. They do not control the judicial branch. And if there are directives, either statutorily or through the court system, they ultimately have to follow that. But to the best of their ability, they're trying to provide certainty. And I think that's what they're trying to say. And so I don't want to make it look like we're, you know, impugning motives to directives of different agencies because their control is limited to what their authority is.
Mr. Bowman, do you have any comments on that?
Madam Chair, I think Representative Falk's analysis is absolutely correct.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. And to Representative Hamilton's point, it's a big point that I would hope that you are careful when you promote this to farmers that there is that huge possible exception and not because in terms of what you said to us before his question, there seemed to be virtual certainty, but in effect, there's not virtual certainty. So I hope you are aware of that and don't sell it under the pretense that there would never be a change that they would be subjected to.
Mr. Wollman.
Madam Chair, it's a very good point that the representative makes, and you know, we have sold the concept of certainty on the basis of what the executive branch can offer. And we hope to strengthen that certainty by also having the legislature consider statutory authorization for certainty as well.
All right, thank you. I just had a question, and perhaps you've answered it earlier, and I might have missed it, but just do you have an anticipation of the number of people that would be going through the certification process and the number that would want to be doing this and the number that you are hoping to get to?
Well, Madam Chair, we are, as I mentioned, we are putting out a request for recommendations sometime in the next week or so, and we'll have a good sense of the number of local pilot areas that would want to participate, and they will be offering us information about the number of farmers that would be in them piloted areas, and so we'll have a better sense of that information soon. But I don't have a sense at this point in time. I think we want to pilot this in three areas of the state to make sure that we can work out all the kinks. Nothing's ever going to be perfect the first time around, and so we want to work out the kinks and make sure that this program is ready to move statewide.
Thank you. Any other questions at this point? Otherwise, we will. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, to that point, in the event we don't have the number of farmers signing up that we had hoped voluntarily, do you see this becoming a mandatory program?
Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chair, we are developing this as a voluntary program. And, you know, there's a number of voluntary programs that are out there, both on the state and the federal level. And this is we believe that this is an opportunity for farmers to accelerate those voluntary best management practices and get the kind of regulatory certainty that they have been seeking for their particular operations. And so we believe this is a great opportunity for farmers to be involved in a very positive program that would help to spread the message that, you know, that farmers are doing some good work. And so I don't know how many farmers will actually enroll in the program. That awaits to be seen, and I think that's a key performance measure for the program moving down the road.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I appreciated your comment, too, when you said a venue to provide the public with some certainty. In your opening comments, you stated how Minnesota farmers have a history of being environmentally sound and conscientious and as the such. And this is one of the areas that I've been critical on to farmers in general and, you know, people with ag interest, is that we've done a wonderful job providing the consumer with a safe, wholesome, great-tasting product. We've done a very poor job educating the consumer on who we are, what we do, and why. And so I guess a little torn on if we recognize all the good work farmers are doing, and we sit here and we state that, but then we also need to have other additional programs in place to help us educate the public. Because the public hasn't been brought up to speed. So like I said, it's a little bit of a, I don't know, a catch-22 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chair, I think, you know, we have done in the agricultural industry, I think we have one of the most affordable, safest, abundant food supplies in the world. Our farmers are some of the best in the world at what they do. But we have not done a real good job of educating the public about how we do our work. And we're seeing the demographics in the state shift away from rural parts of our state. And more people are removed from the farm in terms of, you know, it wasn't so many years ago that everybody had an uncle on the farm or a grandparent. and that's not the case anymore. And so farmers are having to do more and more work to educate folks that are in urban parts of our state about the process of how we produce food. And I think this is a great opportunity to show the public that farmers are, what kinds of conservation practices have farmers already installed on their farms? What kinds of improvements are we making? And, you know, I think about, just from our own farm standpoint, it wasn't too many years ago that, you know, every farmer in Renville County was plowing their ground, whether it was corn or soybean ground, every single fall. That doesn't happen too often anymore. And so there are changes that have been implemented on the landscape, and sometimes we don't get credit for that. And I think this is a great opportunity to begin to capture those improvements that are being made over time and be able to measure how those improvements, how those practice changes are affecting water quality. And I think that's a really important indicator moving forward.
Representative Fitzsimmons.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What would be a process to give some, you talk about certainty, give some certainty to the farmer, the producer, that that this information is going to be held in a way that's strictly dealing with the certification process, or for the people who are looking to do something that's beneficial to their process and their practices, and not get transmitted in some other way to, you know, basically not a lot of people are looking out there to invite someone who could give them a violation in some way onto their property. How do you assure them that employee that's on their property is strictly going to be there to help them with practice and not, you know, end up with a PCA coming to their property because of a transmission of information?
Mr. Woolman.
Madam Chair, Representative, we will have some language in our bill that we will be putting in front of the committee that will go and address that topic of data management. And for the technical advisory committee that the commissioner had put together, that was one of the areas that there was a lot of discussion in terms of how are we going to manage the data, who's going to manage the data, and whether the data for individual farmers would be public or whether it would be private. And Commissioner Fredrickson has reviewed that information from the advisory committee, and I think you know, one of the things that we've seen in other voluntary programs is that the data of the individual producer is always held private and is aggregated in such a way that to the smallest denominator where the individual producer is not identifiable. But the data, I think, needs to be aggregated so that it can be used to show the public the kinds of progress that we're making with this program.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Woolman. I think we'll move on to the next part of the presentation. I think while we're in the process of doing that, we have minutes before us, and Representative Hamilton apparently is itching to be able to move those minutes, so those minutes have been moved. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Mr. Woolman, on to your next part of the presentation, please.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to join you on this portion of the agenda. The department has put forward in the governor's budget request a slate of budget requests for clean water legacy funding. And there are several new projects, including the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program, and our irrigation water quality, and our manure applicator education. The rest of these areas of our budget are consistent with what we've seen in the past. However, the dollar amounts have been adjusted in some ways to reflect the current need and demand out there at this point in time. So for fiscal year 12 and 13, the appropriation was $15.4 million to the Department of Agriculture. The governor's budget requests for 14-15 requests $15.47 million. As I mentioned, we have a $3 million request for the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. I won't go into much more detail about that since that was the item of our previous agenda item. We do have a $3 million nitrates and groundwater request. This money is primarily being spent on activities to help identify potential sources of nitrate contamination and to evaluate and implement practices to reduce nitrates in groundwater. We work a lot with local governments as well as other partners in certain areas of the state where we have areas of high vulnerability to groundwater contamination. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture has a private drinking well network. We do have approximately 2,500 private wells that we work with, and evaluations are being completed on a subset of those homeowners to establish a long-term monitoring network. We work with irrigators to do workshops and implement best management practices for them. We work with them to bring them some of the knowledge and tools and technology to help them make some informed decisions about how to minimize the negative environmental impacts that that could be realized as a part of irrigation. For our ag non-point research, we have a $2.1 million request. These research priorities are developed by an interagency technical team. The proposals are then evaluated by a research committee, and the goals of this research money is really to identify the underlying processes that affect water quality, to evaluate the effectiveness of ag BMPs, and then to develop technologies to target critical areas of our state. Some of the deliverables that we have seen over the last biennium include our ag BMP assessment and tracking tool. We have our ag BMP handbook for TMDLs in Minnesota. We've identified priority management zones for impaired watersheds. We did some work on sentinel watersheds. We also developed a DNA marker for bacteria from cattle, swine, and poultry manure. We're targeting BMPs to critical areas of the landscape and utilizing the LIDAR technology. And also conducted some evaluation of acetochlor losses in drainage tile. We have a $3 million request for our clean water technical assistance funding. There are a number of projects that this technical assistance money goes towards, including our river field to stream partnership in southeastern Minnesota. I have some pictures up on the screen from that partnership, which is really an interesting partnership because it brings some unlikely partners together, including the Minnesota Ag Water Resource Center, the Nature Conservancy, Monsanto, Department of Agriculture. It's a really great public-private partnership designed to help us better understand the relationship between agricultural practices and water quality. And we're utilizing some of the newest tools and technology that's available. We're monitoring at multiple scales, including edge of field monitoring and a small watershed evaluation. Some of the additional activities in the river include assessment of stream channel characteristics, corn stock testing to determine nitrogen availability, and so forth. We also work with Discovery Farms, and Discovery Farms, for those of you who are not aware of that, it's a farmer-led initiative to gather information and assess water quality impacts from different types of farms across Minnesota. We have drainage tile demonstration sites in Rice and Dodge and Maurer County, along Highway 90 and up in the Clay County area. And in the Clay County area, we're getting some baseline data for nutrient concentrations and loads. We're monitoring water quantity and quality of water leaving agricultural fields. And we're looking at different types of drainage systems in that Clay County site. We also have a $3 million request for our Ag BMP loan program. And the Ag BMP loan program has been around for quite a long time. It provides loans to farmers, farm supply businesses, and rural landowners to make feedlot improvements, to construct erosion control structures, septic system upgrades, conservation tillage equipment, other water quality projects. The list goes on. There's a lot of interest in this program. However, the demand in the recent biennium hasn't been as strong, partly because of the economy and I think cheaper interest rates. So we have scaled this BMP loan request back from about $6 million to $3 million. If you look at our Ag BMP loan program, here's a success story. You'll see a before and after picture of a small feedlot. There's really great stories about this all over the state where improvements have been made. We also have a $700,000 request for pesticide monitoring. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture has been doing pesticide monitoring for more than 20 years. This clean water funding has been used to purchase some new analytical equipment that can detect pesticides at even lower rates. We're doing 600 additional samples, and we're detecting a broader suite of chemicals at lower concentrations. We have a $220,000 request. This is a new request for an irrigation water quality specialist. We'll work in partnership with the University of Minnesota Extension, and we would develop and promote agricultural BMPs through this specialist. It would help to fill the gaps in terms of education to irrigators who have, in some cases, limited training and need to develop new irrigation best management practices. We have a new project request of $200,000 for a manure applicator education specialist. Again, this would be working with the University of Minnesota Extension. It would develop new manuals and materials for manure applicators. This will also be, this request is connected to a request that you'll hear about later today on our manure applicator licensing proposal. Last but not least, we have a $250,000 request for a research inventory database. This is the database has been built, but this $250,000 request would essentially populate the database. This is a location for all of our clean water research and other relevant research to be housed. It's user-friendly, where the public can look at this information as well. And it's a central location for all types of water research that's specifically relevant to Minnesota. So with that, Madam Chair, that's a quick overview of our clean water legacy requests. And I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Okay, I believe Representative Fritz has a question.
Well, actually, I have a story I'd like to share. How I met Willie Storley. Willie Storley was the neighbor farm boy about 60 years ago. And 60 years ago, when I was old enough to drive the tractor with the hay rack behind it in the spring of the year, I would take the hay rack through the fields to the end of our property where there was a creek. That's where we deposited our waste that was on the hay rack from the winter. Willie was there depositing their waste. He was about a couple years older than I was. And I often, to this day, my parents are no longer living, and we sold the farm and sold the land that we had on the other side of town. And I often think about that because my sister actually contracted lymph node tuberculosis. She had a big lump on her neck, and that back then, of course, we had to drive up here to the cities to get a specialist. We didn't have them back home. And she's alive and well today, and I think she's about 65 years old. But, you know, it was traumatic and tragic, and I often wonder if it was the water we drank. And because we were really, you know, ignorant, I think, back then, and that's the way we did things. But I thought I'd share that story with all of you, because that's actually not that long ago. So I sometimes think, oh, they make such a big deal out of the water we drink, but I'm getting up there in age, but I'd like to live a little longer and not have the diseases and not pick up any of those diseases like my sister had. So I wonder how, you know, in this committee and through the work that that we all do in trying to keep everybody safe, it's important. And I it's not been that long ago that I met Willie Storley.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that story as well. You know, and that's where we've been trying to, we, the Department of Ag and so many others have been trying to educate the public on what was once considered a waste is now a commodity, and it is a plant food source. And the University of Minnesota did this study, Gunk versus Gold. Manure actually increased yields by 8.1 bushels per acre over commercial fertilizer. And so it's been a huge education process through producers, through the Department of Ag, through the university, I mean, everybody in conjunction with that. So thank you for sharing that story. And Commissioner, you talked about the Ag BMP loan programs. And I know that right now we have been having dollars, cost share dollars available for small farms under, I think it's 300 animal units. 300 or 500 animal units to where they can access those cost share dollars to where help bring them in compliance with current regulations, environmental regulations. And right now we do have an exemption. So small farms are exempt from the environmental regulations until they're able to bring them up into compliance. Is this the same thing that goes towards those programs? And since you're seeing a less dollar amount being used for that, does that mean we're now moving to the point where we've got everybody in compliance?
Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chair, the Ag BNP loan program is not focused primarily or just on small feedlots. It's also used for purchasing new tillage equipment, for example, or septic systems or what have you. I think there's still a need out there. I think when you look at the economy that we are coming out of, one of the worst recessions since the Great Depression, There's also a significant amount of cash in farm country, and interest rates are low on the private side. So I think there's a combination of factors that have resulted in less need at this point in time. And our folks at the Department of Agriculture that work on the Ag BMP loan program think that $3 million is adequate to cover the needed demand at this point in time.
Yeah. Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, and if we kept this at $6 million, could we help those farmers put towards these programs to help bring them into compliance?
Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chair, I'm going to defer that question. I know Mary Hanks is here. Mary, do you know about the IBMP loan program?
And we will be getting more information as we actually hear the bill, the ag policy bill, and have the opportunity to hear some more. So if you have somebody who wants to answer a question now, otherwise we'll maybe defer some of that to...
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, why don't I check with our staff, and we'll get back to you with that information.
And get more detailed information later. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, this research inventory database, is that just the Department of Agriculture data, or are you going to get the University of Minnesota data, the Soil and Water Conservation District data, watershed data, municipal well data? Is this all going to become in one spot and kind of put together in some kind of a coherent manner?
Mr. Bowman.
And if Madam you would Chair, just I have Mary Hanks, who's okay. The director of our ag marketing division at the department,
sure.
And she may be able to help provide us a little bit more.
Just state your name for the record, please, and go ahead.
Madam Chair, my name is Mary Hanks. I'm the director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division. The water quality and representative, the database work resides in my division. The research that will go in, this database is being set up so that the SWCDs, the university, PCADNR, anybody who's doing research can enter that information themselves in the database. And there will be keywords. It'll be totally searchable by the public or any other researcher to not only get the basic information about that research, but also link to a refereed paper or a report. So it's as much of the data as we can get into it. And that's what this proposal would be, is to, we've got the database developed. We want to get it populated and get as much information in there as possible.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And so, oh, yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the slides talked about a groundwater chemical study or contamination study, and the family of chemicals mentioned was acetochlor, and we also had that same term brought up in the environment finance committee, acetochlor. And I should know this, but could you refresh us with some of the more familiar trade names of chemicals that would fall into that family of acetochlor chemicals?
Mr. Bowman.
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert in brand names and all that kind of stuff, but I do have Dan Stoddard here.
Thank you. If you just introduce yourself and able to answer the question if you heard it.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Dan Stoddard. I'm with the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division of the Department of Ag. And a common product is harness for acetochlor, but it's also in a number of different mixes.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for that. I think we're ready to move on to the next part of the presentation. And we'll... So we're going to be talking about commercial manure application at this point. Hello, if you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm the Division Director of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
Thank you, and you can just go ahead with the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My purpose here is to give you a brief overview, and in the interest of time, I know you'll have the language and be able to see the language in our budget bill, and you have more questions, but let me just, and I believe, Madam Chair, that the committee does have a fact sheet in front of them.
I believe we do.
Okay. So there's some information in the fact sheet, but let me just briefly give you a short bit of background. In 1998, as part of the ongoing feedlot discussions, one of the compromise provisions that was put on the table was to have manure applicators licensed by the department. The Department of Agriculture does license pesticide applicators and has done that for a long time. We have a variety of different licenses, and so this provision was modeled after that, and given the expertise that we had, it was thought that manure applicator licensure could reside in the department. So we've been doing this for a while. It's been a relatively relatively small program. We bring in about $6,700 in fees, and we supplemented that with some general funds. So, and working with the university and the PCA, we provided, and all the industry, we provided workshops and basic licensure information. This past, about a year ago, a little bit less than a year ago, the folks who were involved in this program, the university, PCA, some of the industry folks, some of the applicator folks, got together and really wanted to improve the program and develop a more a stronger program. And looking down the road, we thought, well, this would be a great opportunity for all of us to work together and bring forward a program that would meet the times that we live in. About 80% of the manure in southern Minnesota is applied by commercial applicators. We currently license roughly, I think, about 325 applicators. And the industry basically wanted to set up a more rigorous licensure program. And so in working together, I think we had 5 or 6 meetings over the course of the summer and fall. We've designed a program, and we're going to be presenting it to you, and basically what it is, it's a three-tiered licensing program. Every company would be licensed, every site manager would be licensed, and every applicator would be licensed. They would all be paying a licensure fee each year. It's $100 for company, $50 for a manager, and $25 for the applicator. That will generate about $40,000 in revenue. About $38,000 in revenue, and that will focus on the regulatory program. And as Commissioner Wollman mentioned, this is hand in glove with a Clean Water Fund provision in which we're asking for $200,000 to improve the manuals and develop internet certification and testing opportunities there. So those dollars would be focused on some of the work that the university does and does well in terms of developing some of that information, and we would be focused on the regulatory aspects of the program. Everybody would be licensed on an annual basis. Everyone would be involved in recertifying. That would either be through the internet or through workshops. We conduct a lot of workshops as it is, but we don't have the internet provision right now. And then everyone would be required at least once every 2 years to actually attend the workshops, where we see a tremendous amount of value because there's a lot of interaction between the individuals and the instructors. This is really something that that I was impressed with the industry saying, and in one particular meeting, they basically said, we do a good job. We want to make sure that the folks who aren't licensed, if there are some out there, are not involved in this. They get properly licensed, they get properly educated, and we want to make sure that we're seen as professionals. and that, I think, is what this is really about. Being a regulator for many years, it's unusual for an industry group to come forward and say, we want common sense, better regulations than we have right now. So we worked with these folks, and I think we've got a pretty nice proposal to put in front of you. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
All right. Do we have any questions? Otherwise, we will be seeing more of this and learning more about this in the future. All right. Then thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, we will move on. So, Mr. Poster, if you will come forward and start talking to us about Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program.
Yes, if I can direct your attention, you should all have in your packet front and back one pager that is titled exactly that, Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program. So, Madam Chair, I'm Charlie Poster. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Agriculture. Thank you so much for the opportunity to discuss this in front of you today. I just want to give you a top-line overview of this program, what some of its priorities are, and a little bit of history. You can read the first paragraph is the statute that allows the Commissioner of Agriculture to make investments in rural Minnesota. This is really a rural economic development program using agriculture. This funding comes as the budget tails of the ethanol producer payments. The tails of that went into the Agri program, and we've outlined four rough areas of investment for investment. I'll go down to the first one. The first priority is farm-to-school local foods market development. We really feel like this dovetails well with some federal legislation that was passed recently, the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, stating that schools purchase more fruits and vegetables to be used in their lunch counter. And we think this is an opportunity for the Department of Agriculture to step in and help those schools purchase both those fruits and vegetables, but also proteins, meats, and dairy locally, thereby keeping those local dollars circulating in their community to have a real positive effect on their economy. As we, the Department of Ag, went out and started talking to schools, we found that there are some challenges to doing that. And I look at my own experience. I grew up in Buckman, Minnesota, where we had a group of wonderful community leaders used to come in and cook from scratch our lunches every day. But that happens rarely and less every day. It's more that schools are in the business of warming food and heating food rather than cooking. So they really lack the basic infrastructure. And one of the needs that we've identified is they don't have knives. They don't have ovens. They don't have food processing equipment. So this is an opportunity where the department can assist those schools to see what's available in their local communities, if it fits into their lunch program, and then what do they need to actually purchase that food. So that is the first part. And I want to say there, we also think there are positive health outcomes that could come from this. We're very pleased to state that Blue Cross Blue Shield also thinks this is worthwhile, and they've put forth $125,000 of their dollars to help assist schools in their portion of the purchase of equipment. So they view it from a health outcome, but also a real opportunity. And if you flip the sheet over, we'll go to the second piece, livestock development. In the statute language, it says that the commissioner may use livestock investment grants to spur rural economic development. And you heard from Pat Luneman yesterday, the president of the Minnesota Milk Producers, talk about what a positive opportunity has been for his industry, and we agree. This is to expand or help entrance into the livestock industry. It's agnostic on what portion of the industry you're going into, but the milk producers have really made excellent use of the opportunity. So this would help, for instance, with a dairy farm, maybe you want to go towards robotic milkers. And so if you are going to either expand your current operation, Minnesota's number one in turkey production, we're usually number two or three in hog production, we're a top five in dairy, so we're trying to reinvest into our $7 billion livestock industry. We also feel like it leverages private money. For every $1 in state investment, the farmer himself puts in $9 of his own dollars at least, so it leverages a lot of private money. The third piece is agricultural business development. This is in the spirit of the original investment in ethanol, a real value-added opportunity. So we want to continue that. If you want to add value to the commodity or the livestock operation that you run today, we would like to assist you in that, either with planning for expansions or if you're ready to expand, to assist with capital investments. That is being that is out today. And the last piece, biofuels and renewable energy. This really is just like the original investment in ethanol. We want to make sure that Minnesota maintains our leadership in this industry. So through the Next Gen Energy Board, we will continue to invest in research to make sure that we improve efficiency, look for new feedstocks, and also make sure that the next generation of biofuels plants be sited right here in Minnesota. This is very brief. I know that we also have the Board of Animal Health who's supposed to exhibit today, but I'd be open for questions on any of these individual four areas.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a quick question. I noticed in three that you said the demand there already exceeded 3-1 from available. Do you just have an example of some of the requests that were approved?
Yeah. Let's start with the livestock investment grants. That granting round closed January 14th. Let me find it here. We had 302 applicants for $6.7 million worth of funding for the $1 million available. So that was very successful, and that is closed. On the first round of value-added grants, we had two deadlines, the first one being December 31st. We're reviewing the applications now. We had 48 applications for a total of $1.3 million in requests for $500,000 in funding. That's a roughly 3-1. Those are the two that have closed. The livestock investment grant portion is done, but there is a second deadline for value-added grants on March 1st, 2013. So we will have a second round in this fiscal year. Now, the response has been great, and this was on a condensed timeline. We really think that as we get out in the community, talk to our partners in the commodity organizations, our rural economic development organizations, local units, government units, it's as we expand, I think the demand will continue to grow.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's important to point out, and special thanks to then Chair Junkie and Chairwoman Mary Ellen Otremba, who worked very closely with Governor Plenty at the time to form these accounts. And I remember teasing Al when, or Representative Junkie, when we were looking for a name and stuff, we'd call it the Al account or whatever, you know. But again, it was some foresight by some individuals. And the last legislative session, we worked really hard to make sure that we ensured that those tails were going to be captured again to where we could keep that in the ag budget so we can do good work like this as well. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you. All right. Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a clarification, you talked about the Livestock Investment Grant Program being $1 million, and your request, I assume, for the upcoming biennium is a total of $4 million. So will that Livestock Investment Grant number be increased in the coming biennium?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Proster.
Yes, it is our projection is that we roughly double the investment in the Livestock Investment Program each year, so from $1 million to $2 million per year.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. And next we are going to, well, I'm sorry, we had another question. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can we ask a question backtracked on one of the clean water things, or is that, would you rather do that later?
Well, we might want to do it later just because we'll go to the Board of Animal Health and give them the opportunity to, since we're going backwards anyway. Okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Proster. All right, if we would have Dr. Thompson come forward and... just state your name for the record, and then you can begin.
One moment, Madam Chair. I will
yes?
try to get the PowerPoint up and going.
All right. Begin when you're ready.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Thompson. I'm a senior veterinarian with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health.
We appreciate this opportunity to give you all an overview of the board. We thought it would probably be important to give you a background or historical context of the board. If you go back to the mid to late 1800s, Minnesota was an agricultural state, and people used horses to get around. They went into town to get their groceries, get their supplies on horses. There was a disease at that time that was a respiratory disease that was hitting both people and horses. And the name of the disease was glanders. And the Department of Health at that time found it necessary to start up a veterinary services division to help them fight that disease. And as the number of livestock in Minnesota grew, so did the disease concerns. So in 1903, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association, some of the stockyard companies that were located here in Minnesota, and other agencies banded together and supported a bill that started the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. Up in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see our board as it was in 1903. And of course, those color pictures, that's our 2013 Board of Animal Health. The board, the citizen board that oversees us, is set out by statute. There are two veterinarians and three non-veterinarians. Those three non-veterinarians come to us from the three large livestock industry groups here in Minnesota, cattle, hogs, and poultry. And our state veterinarian and executive director right now is Dr. Bill Hartman. We have staff located here in St. Paul. We also have the Wilmer Poultry Testing Laboratory, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. And importantly, we have staff located throughout the state of Minnesota. We have veterinarians, non-veterinarians, boots on the ground. If some issue arises, a producer can call and somebody can get over there and help them out. Our budget for 2012-2013 was right under $10 million. We also received some federal funding, but that amount has been decreasing. We were up to right around $4 million at one point, but last year it dropped to just under $600,000 for that year. And that picture that you see up on the screen right there, that's one of our veterinarians taking a blood draw from a cow, and I'll call her a cow because I can't see the back end of her. And there's a couple of our non-veterinarians there. It's called a head gate or a chute that they're holding that animal in to take the blood draw. The primary function of the board is to work with diseases that are economically important to our producers, or those diseases that might affect, like I mentioned, glanders, both people and animals. And the pictures that you have up on the screen right now on that left-hand side, it's a couple of our staff taking a official identification. In a disease event, it's very important that we're able to track diseases or trace the animals. And that's what they're doing, is putting official identification in so we can trace the animals. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, we've got another one of our veterinarians taking a swab from a very lucky bird. We don't do what we do by ourselves. As I mentioned, USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, we work closely with other state agencies here, Department of Ag, Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources. We also work with, if we have a very specific disease area, such as the TB that we had a few years back, Roseau County, we work with Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, and then, of course, the various livestock groups, too, like cattlemen's and pork producers. We work with two laboratories. The first that I want to mention is the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory. This laboratory is located out in Wilmer. One of our assistant directors and senior veterinarian is out there working in that laboratory. It's a cooperative effort with the University of Minnesota. They do surveillance and export testing for the state of Minnesota. Very important for us because we are number one in the production of turkeys. We also work with the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. That lab is located here in St. Paul, University of Minnesota campus. Along with the veterinary school, program disease testing for the Board of Animal Health, because it's our official laboratory, goes through that lab. And it's very important to note that this laboratory is the only lab in the state of Minnesota that has an animal autopsy service. So again, very important for disease tracking. I'd like to go into some of our success stories.
And as Representative Hamilton noted yesterday, some of the hogs are moving back towards the Midwest from the outer sides of, you know, out in North Carolina. In 2009, as far as hogs marketed, Minnesota was number three. We're up to number two now in the number of hogs marketed. There was a disease known as pseudorabies back in the 80s, 90s, a very devastating disease to the pork producers in Minnesota. It caused them a lot of pain and money coming out of their pockets for vaccines, movement controls, export requirements. Board of Animal Health banded together with pork producers, and as of 2003, we are pseudorabies free. Avian pneumovirus is a virus that affects mainly turkeys. It's a respiratory disease. Again, it's another example. The board worked together with the turkey growers in Minnesota and eliminated that virus. Again, it was very costly to that industry, the turkey industry, here in Minnesota. Chronic wasting disease. We have a very vibrant farm survey producer group here in Minnesota. We have over 500 farm survey farms. Working together with them on the Farm Survey Program, doing surveillance testing, we have detected and depopulated four herds. Farm Survey includes deer, elk, reindeer, many other species. Scrapie, we can't forget about our sheep and goat producers. Scrapie is an effort, the board works with USDA, it's a national effort to eliminate this disease. And I think it's been since 2010 since we've found an infected flock. Again, up on the screen, we've got, it's something like you saw before, we've got a veterinarian taking a blood draw. And I'll call her a ewe lamb because I can't see the back end of her, but that's what they're doing to do the surveillance for that. Most recently, and one of our biggest success stories is bovine tuberculosis. Back in 2005, a cow was sent to a slaughter plant over in Wisconsin and was found to have tuberculosis. Because of the official identification that was in that animal, we were able to track or trace that animal back to a herd located in northwestern Minnesota. And through surveillance, we found, all told, 12 infected herds up in that area. Now, that was very important. Even though we found tuberculosis only in the northwestern part of the state, cattle producers in the rest of the state had increased export requirements for a couple years after that finding. But in 2011, we did go back to TB-free status here in Minnesota. So once again, the reason for the Board of Animal Health, the reason why we exist is because we, number one, deal with those diseases that are economically important to our producers here in Minnesota, and then number two, we also deal with those diseases that affect both people and animals. Madam Chair, that's all I have. If there are any questions.
Thank you. Questions? I believe Representative Hamilton has a question.
Oh, these guys up here want to know what the back end had to do with anything. I'm just teasing, Madam Chair. I'm just teasing. All right. I would like to thank you for all the work that you do. Your examples, it was phenomenal. You know, I remember I was directly involved with pseudorabies eradication, working on farms and whatnot, and all the blood testes eradication, working on farms and whatnot, and all the blood testing and everything that went into that. Huge success story. Bovine TB. All the work went in that too. And I remember having a conversation with the late Bob Christensen, and of course he's a pork producer, right? And I said, what's one of the biggest concerns moving forward? And he said, emerging diseases, you know, the threat of. And so just can't thank you enough, you and the department, for what you've done along the way and all the groups that you said that you work with as well. Minnesota has been fantastic.
Yes, Representative Fitzsimmons.
I just echo what Representative Hamilton said. We've worked a lot. My uncle is on the Board of Animal Health, and you know, we work with the Veterinary Diagnostic Service all the time, and they're always updating and perfecting what they do and speeding up that time. And as Representative Hamilton knows, it's often time is of the essence, and every time you're waiting on blood results, it's lost economic activity. So great service that they do. And if anyone wants to try to draw blood off a 600-pound boar, I'd be happy to take him out to one of our sites and show him how.
Thank you for that suggestion. Okay, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there another disease on the horizon that you are starting to work on now to, if it shows up here, that you'll have a head start on it? Are there anything out there that's scary?
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee, there are diseases, I don't want to say there's anything on the horizon, no, but there are diseases that we are always preparing for, such as foot and mouth disease, that seems to be the one that hits the newspapers the most. So part of our board programs includes emergency planning, and that would include planning for what to do if, knock on wood, cross your fingers, we ever got that disease.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson, for sharing both the history and the vision of the Board of Animal Health and its importance to our state and certainly to all of us as we are concerned about food safety and about good animal production here. So appreciate your opportunity today for you to be here. And we have Representative Anderson who might have another question.
Yeah, just one last question. You commented on the tracing a cow back from Wisconsin back up to northwest Minnesota. Just like to ask you, do you think the traceability is adequate, or do we need better ability to trace where especially cattle originate and come from?
Dr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, members of the committee, that is a push across the United States right now, traceability, and especially in breeding cattle. Now, unlike hogs or poultry that seem to move in groups, where you're able to trace those groups, cattle don't seem to move that way. And that is why, you know, at this point, the board is making a push towards greater traceability, especially with breeding cattle.
All right. Well, thank you for your presentation. And thank you for the questions. Just a couple of notes. Does somebody else have a... okay, so just thank you. A couple of things. One is that next week we'll meet again on Wednesday and Thursday, and now I'll be searching for people who may want to volunteer to do their commercials. Representative Anderson was willing to be the first, but I believe, yes, Representative Thiel.
I saw a little note on my email. Yes, I would be willing to
great.
Talk about northwestern Minnesota next week.
Okay, great. So Representative Peel will be on for Wednesday, and I'll be probably tracking a few people down here in the next hour or so to see who else might be interested in doing Thursday. A couple of things, too. We do have the Mail C Sunset Extension Bill, so if you're interested in signing on, I think a few people might want to sign on to that bill before we put that in the hopper. And Representative Hamilton has a... No? No? Okay, so I know that a few people have signed on, but if others want to do that today, we can do that, and then we can turn that in. And other than that, everyone have a good, safe weekend, and thank you. We will see you next week. Meeting adjourned.